Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. Charlie Chan. The name itself can sound like an ethnic jab. Hollywood's caricature cop with his baggy suit, wise sayings, and bad grammar made plenty of Chinese Americans' blood boil over the years. In the 1930s, he was big. By the 1980s, scholars declared Charlie Chan dead and good riddance. But a China-born writer discovered Chan one day and loved him. He says, behind the yellow face portrayal by a white actor and the whiff of racism is a fabulous and funny detective on par with Philip Marlowe and other great sleuths of fiction. This hour on Point, a controversial reconsideration of Charlie Chan. You can join the conversation. Do you remember Charlie Chan? Do you cringe at the memory? Do you see a brilliant detective or a Chinese Uncle Tom? You can also comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. We will hear later in this hour from celebrated Chinese-American playwright Frank Chin, who says no thanks to a Chan revival. But joining me now from Ithaca, New York, is Yuntae Huang. He's a professor of English at the University of California, Santa Barbara, born and raised in China, a young student at Tiananmen. He fled China, immigrated to the U.S., sold Chinese food in Alabama, became a scholar. His new book is Charlie Chan, The Untold Story of the Honorable Detective and His Rendezvous with American History. Yuntae Huang, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you, Tom, for having me. Glad to be here.
What got you so interested, of all things, maybe even obsessed with, Charlie Chan?
Well, he's funny. You know, you can't deny that. But as you pointed out in the introduction, you know, how I came to Charlie Chan was sort of really like an accident, right? When I was a graduate student in Buffalo, that was about my third year in the United States. Mm-hmm. And one day I went to an estate sale in Buffalo, New York. And Buffalo is really a great place for estate sales for various reasons.
Yeah, unfortunately.
But anyhow, and so at the estate sale one day, I found these two Charlie Chan volumes of novels. And I took them home. I was immediately hooked. And so that's the beginning of everything.
We will have listeners who may know a lot about Charlie Chan. We may have listeners who, because he's more or less disappeared from TV movie lineups, may know almost nothing. Let's hear just a little bit, if we could, Mr. Huang. This is
Here's
Warner Oland. And now, this is a Swedish actor who played in many of the movies, played Charlie Chan. Warner Oland as Charlie Chan and Drew Layton as Pamela Gray in, this is from 1934, Charlie Chan in London.
Mr. Chan.
That is humble name.
I'm Pamela Gray. A friend sent me to see you. I must speak to you.
Much regret, but no time. In 1 hour, catch train for boat to Honolulu.
Please. Mr. Chan, I'm in the most terrible trouble. There's no one in London, no one in the world who can help me except you.
World is large. The lonely Chinaman.
Oh, you must help me.
From Charlie Chan in London, 1934, World is Large, Me, Lonely Chinaman. Yuntae Huang, I mean, I guess you can see in a hurry why a whole lot of Chinese Americans may have thought over the years, this is not how we want to be portrayed, this kind of funny stumbling grammar and odd presentation. What do you see going on here?
Well, I think that's a great phrase, you know, to say me, lowly Chinaman. Actually, this is one of the epigraphs in one of my book chapters. It's really when I describe, you know, who Charlie Chan is. And here behind, you know, Charlie Chan, we are talking about many Charlie Chans, you know. There's one real Charlie Chan, which is something I was really astonished to discover.
Policeman in Hawaii, yes.
Exactly, mm-hmm. Changapana. And he was the inspiration for the fictional Charlie Chan. And for those of you who are not familiar with, you know, who the real Charlie Chan is, Apana was a 5-foot-tall Cantonese cop in Honolulu in the early 20th century. He was born in Hawaii and grew up in China until he was 10 and came back to Hawaii with his uncle. And he became a pañuelo, that's Hawaiian for cowboy. And then he joined the police force in 1898, just when Hawaii was annexed by the United States. And he became a local legend because, he wore, walked the most dangerous beats in Chinatown and carrying a bullwhip that he made himself. That was actually his only weapon. He never carried a gun. And one time he single-handedly arrested 40 people without firing a shot.
So this is Chang Apana in Hawaii, a real historical figure who caught the attention of an Ohio, Harvard guy, Earl Durr Biggers, who ended up sort of working off newspaper stories of Mr. Apana and creating Charlie Chan. Who was Earl Durr Biggers?
Well, that's the other thing I write about in my book, is to find out this young Buckeye, coming from Warren, Ohio, went to Harvard, and then became a mystery writer, and then stumbled upon, a newspaper clipping, really, about this, Chang Apana. And he had never heard of a Chinese, detective before, so it gave him the inspiration. But as Charlie Chang would say, writers or authors, sometimes take strange liberties. And there's a huge difference, of course, between, Chang Apana and the real and the fictional Charlie Chang. On the one hand, the fictional Charlie Chang is fat and, he's well-dressed, whereas the real Charlie Chang, Chang Apana, he's skinny, wiry, and 5 foot tall. And he was also actually illiterate. He couldn't read or write in English, although later on he taught himself, to read in Hawaiian, really, but not in English.
Mr. Biggers wrote 6 detective novels with Charlie Chan. There were then 47 Hollywood movies made between 1926 and 1949. That Charlie Chan, he was very popular, but he was seen as a kind of, answer to Step and Fetch It or Sambo, a kind of yellow face answer to blackface, especially played by a white actor. This was spouting these sort of chopped up Confucian aphorisms, a kind of effeminate presence in the movies. But with all that, many may have seen him as an improvement over Fu Manchu, the what you call the Mongolian Satan, who had been the Asian American figure in Hollywood before Charlie Chan.
Yes. Charlie Chan, the reception of Charlie Chan is sort of strange. I think we have been familiar with a very simplified version of how, the image of Charlie Chan has been transformed in American popular culture or popular imagination. Mm-hmm. As I, put it writing in my book, he emerged at a critical moment in American culture, which is 1924. And the summer of 1924 was a turning point in American culture, as you know, Tom. That the passage of Johnson Reed Act, which is the first time, is kind of the landmark immigration legislation to basically to stop immigrants from coming, especially Asian immigrants. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Because one of the 3 major components was to deny immigration to people who are not eligible for citizenship. And Asians at the time were not eligible for citizenship. Mm-hmm. So on the one hand, we kind of create this kind of really the first time to create this legal category of Asiatic. That's the term that was used then, Asiatic. Condemn them to be permanent foreigners. On the other hand, a Chinaman, a lovely, funny, charismatic Chinaman stumbled on the stage. And that's something that's really, and that really first got my attention. It's like, why? Why is that? And there are many explanations, if you can, bear with me for a minute. First of all, there's always such a craze for Japan and China ever since the 19th century. So there's only one hand, there's the love for the Oriental, for the Orient. And on the other hand, there's racism. It's undeniable. And on the third point is that Charlie Chan, as you pointed out, has always been, played on the screen by white actors. And that's the other thing that fascinates me about American culture, about specifically about Charlie Chan, is the yellow face performance, so what I call this kind of racial ventriloquism. And that's something really kind of quite American. I mean, you know, when you look at blackface, you know, Jew face, red face, and now yellow face. And that's part of American culture that I really want to study.
It's fascinating. I mean, there has been such a reaction to him in later decades. You know, people said we want to bury Charlie Chan, said Charlie Chan is dead. But you write about what you call the strength of his character, his beguiling Oriental charm, his Confucian analects turned into sing-song Chinatown blues.
Right. Yes. Well, you know, I mean, if you look around today, you know, what are the images of Chinaman, let's just say, if we can use that term. And because, you know, part of my mission in my book is to really to write the history of Chinaman in the United States.
We can say Englishman and we can say Frenchman, but there's a historical reason we don't say Chinaman. They really got rough treatment in this country.
Exactly. I mean, the term Chinaman started out as a neutral term, just like you say, Englishman or Frenchman. Mm-hmm. But only when in the middle of the 19th century, when anti-Chinese sentiments gained currency in the United States, you know, Chinaman became a negative term. But to go back to my point, you know, if you look around today, what are the stereotypes, let's say, of Asian men especially?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, you have Jackie Chan, you know, Jet Li. You know, it's this all like a muscular, ass-kicking heroes. And not everybody can be ass-kicking heroes. And, you know, I'm like, you know.
You're not a kung fu master? Okay.
Yeah, I'm not. I can't be. There's no way. I'm 5'10" and I weigh only 140 pounds. So, but Charlie Chan really gives me sort of kind of, I don't know, he creates this image of a sage.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Talking this hour about a new look at Hollywood's controversial Chinese detective character Charlie Chan. China-born scholar Yuntai Wang revisits the tale in his new book, Charlie Chan, The Untold Story of the Honorable Detective and His Rendezvous with American History. On the radio, Charlie Chan was heard on four networks between 1932 and 1948. Here's the beginning of Charlie Chan and the Telltale Hands from The Adventures of Charlie Chan.
Join the famous detective as he combines the wisdom of the East and the science of the West in a dramatic chapter from The Adventures of Charlie Chan.
Charlie Chan humbly bids you good evening and extends warm welcome. Ancient proverb relates, what 10 men build, one hand may destroy. Tonight, we meet hand that spread highly odd form of destruction. Listen, please. Thank you.
And America listened and read and watched on the big screen for many years. 47 Charlie Chan films. Yuntai Wang joins us from Ithaca, New York. He's now a professor of English at the University of California, Santa Barbara. Born and raised in China, was there at Tiananmen as a young student. Now he's here with a deep interest in Charlie Chan. Yuntai Wang, how has your new look been received? What are you hearing from Chinese Americans? Do they think you, I don't know, have a right as a recent immigrant from China to look at this figure that was pretty much boxed out of mainstream culture for some years here?
Well, like I said, you know, he presents this unique image of an Asian as a sage, but he's also funny. And that's really an powerful antidote, you know, to this other image of Bruce Lee and Jackie Chan. To answer your question, the reception has been quite warm and, but also enthusiastic in the mainstream press, I believe, so far as I can tell. But I understand in many probably I'll hear something different. So, Charlie Chan is really, it's not just for Asian Americans, you know, he's an American product, you know, as American, as I said in the book, as Jack Kerouac, the French-Canadian hipster,
Jack Kerouac, explain that to us.
Because Jack Kerouac he came from a French-Canadian immigrant family, and how, you know, he transformed himself, this quintessential American hero, as American as American, as apple pie. And so far, you know, not everybody has agreed to accept Charlie Chan as an apple pie. Let's just put it that way. And my book is really trying to solve that mystery and to prove that, you know, put it simply, Charlie Chan is an American product, right?
But do you see him as having been a way to put down Chinese Americans, to present them in a, you know, this kind of odd, almost simpering, fractured English way?
Right. No, absolutely. I understand that. So I'm trying to reconcile these two images. So essentially, I'm talking about two Charlie Chans. On the one hand, is the Charlie Chan, you know, in the movies, in the radio, who is really funny and well-loved by millions of people who grew up with the image of Charlie Chan. On the other hand, is the Charlie Chan who is really hated. So I'm trying to reconcile these two images, really. And
You make him out as almost a kind of hero. You put him in the tradition, the Chinese tradition, of the Monkey King. Explain that tradition to us and how you see Charlie Chan as
falling. Well, Monkey King, you know, Sun Wukong in Chinese, he is, you know, he's a trickster figure. He hides his weapon, which is a golden rod, you know, inside his ear as a piece of hair. So when he needs it, he will kind of, you know, pull out the hair and blow air into the hair, and then will become a golden rod. And he's a trickster figure. When you look back in American literature and culture, you have a lot of trickster figures, starting with, you know, Herman Melville's Confidence Man, and going down all the way to Afro-American tradition, the signifying monkey, and Native American tradition, tradition coyote, and all these trickster figures who's really wise, you know, sometimes plays dumb, but they're actually very smart. And that's Charlie Chan. And that's why I'm saying Charlie Chan is an American product. And he is a trickster, a folk hero in the same tradition as, you know, as signifying monkey and coyote.
Trickster. At the same time, you write that the core strength of Chan's character lies in his pseudo-Confucian, aphoristic wisdom, reveals the Chinaman as a sage, wise, calm, responsible, commonsensical man, who also happens to be a hilarious, wise acre. I mean, people responded in all kinds of ways that, you know, he would say things. There's zillions of quotes online. You can find Charlie Chan saying,
right,
holiday mood like fickle girl, privilege to change mind, or old excuse like ancient billy goat has whiskers, or beauty of poppy contains sting of death, or owner of nose cannot always see nose. But is there a kind of fortune cookie reductionism here?
Well, you have to agree, these are a lot better than fortune cookie sayings, right? You know, when I was running my restaurant down in Alabama, you know, one of my dreams was to really retype all those, you know, dull fortune cookie sayings. You know, instead I will insert, you know, these Charlie Chan sayings, which are a lot better, but also to include, like, quotes from T.S. Eliot, or, you know, like, April is the cruelest month, or something like, we know what you did last summer. Mm-hmm. And sayings like that, you know, just to be, you know, funny and provocative. So I see Charlie Chan as a much better version to, you know, what is available out there today.
We're going to hear in a moment from the celebrated Chinese-American author and playwright Frank Chin, who's not so high on Charlie Chan. But let's go to our listeners first. Yuntai Wang is with us. His new book is Charlie Chan, The Untold Story of the Honorable Detective, and his rendezvous with American history. Michael in Chelsea, Massachusetts. Michael, you're on the air.
Oh, thank you. My point I'd like to make is the fact that I watched all the Werner Olin films. And in those films, I didn't get a consensus in my mind of thinking that he was subhuman type, like they try to prove.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was one time he was talking to the Parisian chief of police. And the chief of police says, that was a good guess, Charlie. And Werner Olin says, excuse, please, did not guess. And so it showed an emphasis of intelligence and being humble at the same time, which is a trait of the Chinese. They were great people. I mean, let's face facts. They had the the ability to make gunpowder 2,000 years ago. And instead of making guns and cannons to kill people, they made beautiful ornamental fireworks displays.
Michael, when you were presumably fairly young and watching this, did you know that Charlie Chan was being played by a Swedish guy?
Oh, yeah. I knew they were all white. Don't forget something. Most of it wasn't done through any actual prejudice. Now, Paul Robeson, I'll give you an exemplification of what I'm talking about. Paul Robeson was a black singer, performer. He made it in the movies. And the reason why he made it and others didn't was because they weren't in the theater. Paul Robeson was in the theater. You follow what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Now, on the other hand, Werner Olin, he was a theatrical performer. Cindy Tola, all of them. And they didn't have Orientals in the theater. So why? How could they bring that in?
Look,
follow what I mean? So
yeah.
This is so much people think in terms of prejudice. And a lot of respects, the one reason why I think the Chinese didn't have so much of a problem here during the Second World War is because of those programs.
Of course, we weren't at war with China. But, Michael, I really appreciate your thoughts from that time. I want to hear a little bit more of Werner Olin playing Charlie Chan here in Charlie Chan in Shanghai. Now, this was released in 1935. You'll hear Ki Luke playing his son Lee Chan, and maybe a little kind of assimilation to American style interaction going on.
Before you bawl me out, Pop, I was on my way back here when I saw the taxi driver that knocked me out.
You follow?
I'll say I did. He went into a cheap joint on the waterfront, the Versailles Cafe.
Did not notify police?
Of course I didn't. I beat it back here to tell you.
That is good.
Charlie Chan and son Lee Chan, the fictional there, in 1935. Yin Tae Wang, you write about this as a kind of bridge into American acculturation in some ways.
Right. Well, it's funny that, almost a few, only a few months after the release of this film in the United States, but also in Shanghai and the major cities in China, Werner Olin went to visit Shanghai and Beijing. And, he was mobbed by the journalists and, people. You know, they just worship him as the real Charlie Chan, the same way as, say, Chang Apana will walk down the, streets in Honolulu and being called Charlie Chan. And so Werner Olin encountered the same phenomenon. And he actually was, serious enough to actually learn Chinese and read up on Chinese philosophy and art. But the point I want to make here is that, after the visit, the Charlie Chan movies, which were tremendously popular in China, gave impetus to a kind of nascent Chinese, Charlie Chan film industry. And China and studios in Shanghai and Hong Kong began producing their own Charlie Chan movies. And the actor, it's just too bad that the reels have been lost. But according to contemporary accounts, the leading Chinese actor who played Charlie Chan will actually, try to imitate Werner Olin. So we are talking about a real Chinaman imitating a Swedish, imitation of a Chinaman.
But is that because at that time China was a pretty beaten down? I mean, can you imagine China being into this today when it's strong and, striding forward?
It's hard to say. It's difficult to read the pulse of Chinese nationalism. It's like, it reminds me of what my recent encounter with a Chinese publisher when I was talking to him about, my book.
Mm-hmm.
And he would say, right now we are actually more interested in Fu Manchu. What do you make of that?
Let's conquer the world, Mongolian Satan,
exactly.
As you say. Oh boy,
as bad as Fu Manchu is, at least he's powerful.
Right.
But Fu, like Charlie Chan, he's just too polite.
The trickster, the polite trickster, maybe not right now. Teddy in Bluffton, South Carolina. Teddy, you're on.
Oh, this is just such a delightful. Thank you so much for having this. And I'm very anxious to read the book. I grew up with the Charlie Chan films, my brother and I, and I can't even remember the first time that we saw them. I'm 62 years old, and we loved them. They were some of our favorite films that we ever saw, and we always looked upon the Chinese as extremely bright, probably brighter than most American white people at the time, and we we just felt that they were wonderful. And I think the last time that I saw a Charlie Chan film was in my early 20s and continue to feel the same way.
So you didn't see racism there? You didn't see a stigma with his way?
Not at all.
Well, let us hold on to that. Teddy, thanks for calling. One more right here. Richard in Kingston, Rhode Island. Richard, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yes, sir.
I used to listen to Charlie Chan. I'm, you know, in my dotage now. But when I was a kid, I listened to Charlie Chan. And what he did was bring to mind my Italian grandparents. They spoke in broken English.
Mm-hmm.
And but what they were saying was very wise and instructive. And I learned that from the Charlie Chan movies, hey, this guy's a smart guy. He solves things. And I took the same principles that he was using and applied them to my grandparents. And I thought, wow, you know, my grandparents don't speak the King's English. You know, here I am, first generation.
Right, but they were wise, and you knew it.
They were wise, and I knew it. And Charlie just confirmed it. So I loved Charlie Chan.
Richard, I appreciate your call as well. Forgive me, but I want to get another voice in here right now, if I may. Yunte Huang, please stand by in Ithaca. Joining us now from Los Angeles is Frank Chin, celebrated Chinese-American author and playwright, considered one of the pioneers in Asian-American theater. His play, The Chicken Coop Chinaman, was the first by an Asian-American to be produced on a major New York stage back in 1972. Many awards and accolades. We're honored to have him with us. Frank Chin, thank you very much for joining us today.
I've listened to the longest crap. I hear a Chinese saying he had no other inspiration but a stereotype, and he's seeking to resolve both sides of the stereotype. The answer to the stereotype, the antidote, his word, to the stereotype is our stereotype, our first character from the first novel in the world, Guan Gong, from the Romance of the Three Kingdoms. Does he know Guan Gong?
Every Chinese knows Guan Gong, and many Americans have
know Guan Gong?
Well, if I may, just so our listeners know what you're talking about, this is a very fierce-looking general you often see in a Chinese restaurant or establishment with a big kind of a scabbard or spear.
It looks like a can opener, right?
Yeah, exactly, and he is one
like
big, fierce-looking...
And it weighs 100 pounds.
Yeah, some super-masculine, big, fierce warrior. Yunte Huang, do you know? Of course you know Guan Gong.
Of course. Grew up in the countryside in China, you know, his temple is everywhere. But, and it's not possible not to know Guan Gong. But Frank, thank you so much for coming up on the show. I mean, I'm a great admirer of your work. And, you know, and
of my work.
Yes, absolutely. Yes, absolutely.
What have you read of my work?
I read your Gunga Ding, you know,
Highway.
The great book about Charlie Chan, or The Father and the Son. And I actually, in my book, I quote from your, you know, Sons of Chan. That's my favorite essay or story, really, when you end with, say, you know, G.U.E. is Bob Pop. You know, I have got a surprise. Have I got a surprise for you? Which means I'm going to kill you.
But, if I may, Frank Chin, are you saying that this is the wrong image of China, of the Chinese? You want the big warrior.
I'm saying the image of Charlie Chan is a racist image produced by racists, acted by racists, and perpetuated by racists. The image of the Chinese that should be that in the best of both worlds, and mm-hmm. best of all worlds, mm-hmm. Would be posed against Charlie Chan is our stereotype of ourselves.
That is the great and strong general.
Is Guan Gong. Guan Gong was. He symbolizes man.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're looking this hour at a new look at Hollywood's controversial Chinese detective character, Charlie Chan. China-born scholar Yunte Huang revisits the tale in his new book, Charlie Chan, the untold story of the honorable detective and his rendezvous with American history. Here's Charlie Chan is in Charlie Chan at Monte Carlo, 1937.
In future, remember, tongue often hang man quicker than rope.
Kind of chopped back Confucian aphorisms there. What do you see in Charlie Chan? A brilliant detective on par with Hercule Poirot and Philip Marlowe? Or a simpering and obedient Asian Uncle Tom, an embarrassing mockery of Chinese culture and manner? And this can a mainland China-born and raised scholar know what this character means or meant to Chinese Americans? Yuntai Wang joins us from Ithaca, New York, this hour, and also with us from Los Angeles, California. Frank Chin is here, celebrated Chinese-American author and playwright, author of The Gunga Din Highway, Donald Duck, Bulletproof Buddhists, and other essays. Frank, I want to give the floor back to you for a second here, because you came out pretty strong saying this is the wrong image entirely.
No. I'm saying the Chinese image of themselves is Guan Gong, and the white image of the Chinese is Charlie Chan.
And what flows from that? What?
And in comparison, as I know Donald Duck, as I know Little Red Riding Hood, as I know you should know the Chinese side too, so you should know what the Chinese think of the Chinese. We know what the whites think of the Chinese. We know what the whites think of the whites. But
Americans don't really know the Chinese understanding of themselves, the way the world knows Rumpelstiltskin from Germany or Jack and the Beanstalk from England or
exactly,
Cinderella from France.
Exactly. And Charlie Chan is a reason for justification for the whites not to know. The Chinese have offered Guan Gong. They have offered all their knowledge right off the boat in 1849. They came off the boat. The customs, inspectors noted that the Chinese brought with them statues of Guan Gong. They didn't know what they were, but they reported them. We knew Guan Gong. We came. We were literate. We knew what we were talking about. We knew we were
mm-hmm.
coming to America.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, 1849, Chinese American history began. Chinese American history and Chinese history were separate histories. What happened to the Chinese here did not happen to the Chinese in China. The author of Charlie Chan, the Charlie Chan book,
mm-hmm.
he obviously doesn't know Chinese American history. He doesn't know. Just for your listeners, let me describe Guan Gong so they can recognize him if they see him when they walk into a shop.
And again, you're talking about the great general from way back in the Three Kingdoms era of China.
He was more than a great general.
Mm-hmm.
He was more than a great general.
Mm-hmm.
He introduces himself as a murderer. And for some reason, Lao Bei, who represents morality, who represents heaven, he decides to accept him to save China. The Zhong Fei, who represents earth, is a rich farmer, and he is providing Lao Bei money to raise an army. And he decides that Guan Gong is a good guy, too. And the three of them form the triad that is at the center of the romance of the Three Kingdoms.
Mm-hmm. And there are three statues all over the place right up to this day. Yuntai Wang, you're listening, and you hear Frank Chin's almost desperation to get the real
That's
cultural
not desperation.
Stories.
It's anger.
You hear this, Yuntai Wang, that maybe Charlie Chan stands in the way of Americans and others.
No, he doesn't stand in the way. The refusal. I mean, Yuntai Wang makes no mention of the Chinese having a stereotype of their own, themselves.
But Frank, that's not what he's writing about.
And Yuntai Wang just said that he had no stereotype either. He had to turn to Charlie Chan.
He enjoyed Charlie Chan. Charlie Chan image was more congenial to himself.
Let me ask Yuntae Wong then, Mr. Wong, why are you writing about Charlie Chan instead of a great traditional Chinese, you know, figure?
Writing about them both at the same time. That should be a comparison.
Mr. Wong, let's hear it.
Well, sure. Well, there's another Chinese hero that I really worship, which is Monkey King. And that's
Monkey
how
King
I look at
later.
Charlie Chan.
Monkey King is code. Monkey King is code.
Well, code for what? What's your response?
Well, we have two images here, or two Chinese heroes doing this battle on the stage. One is red-faced, very wise, you know, Guan Gong, which is really a hero, a warrior. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, we have another kind of warrior who's funny. Sometimes he's mischievous, which is Monkey King, like I said. And Charlie Chan is really the Monkey King, the trickster figure. So I think, you know, if you ask any Chinese, they will understand, you know, both are heroes. It's not that one is better than the other or one came earlier than the other or anything.
Monkey King lives in the same universe as Guan Gong. Monkey King is a hero of the Tang Dynasty, following by centuries the Han Dynasty that produced Guan Gong. Monkey King refers to Guan Gong. Monkey King refers to Sun Tzu. Monkey King is in the same universe, continuous with Guan Gong. Monkey King is code. He is not a man. He is less than a man. He is not a real ape. He is made of rock. He was born out of a spontaneous explosion of a mountaintop.
Frank Chen, why is it so important to you that Americans would understand Guan Gong, the fierce general warrior, rather than a Charlie Chan Monkey King figure?
Why does it have to be either? Why does it have to be?
Well, not every book can be about everything, and you're objecting.
Why does it have to be? If you're talking about the Chinese,
yes,
and you're saying the Chinese object to the being portrayed as Charlie Chan, then what do they prefer? I say that Charlie Chan is a white stereotype of a white behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And the antidote to that stereotype, Wong's word, is the truth. The truth. Literature. We're just talking about literature.
Yuntae Wong?
Yes. If I might interject, you know, there's an interesting chapter of the history here, which is the reception of Charlie Chan, or the what I would call the tarnishing of the image of Charlie Chan is post-World War II, really. And that's a critical moment of the turn of Charlie Chan's image, when China, the word China or Chinatown, what I call the C word, became, you know, really acquired a very negative connotation. Look, I'm not trying to convince, you know, like Frank, you know, to convince you to like Charlie. It's impossible because that, you know, racism took place.
Mm-hmm.
It affected your life. It's impossible for me, for instance, you know, I'm not trying to convince anybody who grew up with, you know, your neighborhood kids coming to you doing Charlie Chan or chasing after you, you know, chanting, you know, Ching Chong Chinaman sitting
right
on a fence. That's
mm-hmm.
impossible. And that's actually the moment when Charlie Chan became so popular in the United States.
Yes, these kids do exist.
Yes.
Who were deprived, these Chinese Americans, who were deprived of the existence of a book of children's literature called Romance of the Three Kingdoms and Guan Gong. They're deprived of that, and they become susceptible to kids say, Ching Chong Chinaman. And they go, oh, I'm not a Ching Chong Chinaman. And they become susceptible. Hey, Jap! And, whoa, I'm not a Jap. But before they can answer, the white kid is gone. The answer should be, you know, they know they're not a Jap. What do they know? They know Guan Gong. They have their own image of themselves. Their image of themselves is not made by an outside party.
Let's go to our listeners, Columbia, South Carolina. Jorg, you're on the air, Jorg.
Yeah, hi, Tom.
Hi.
Wow, what an amazing show. I listen to you every day, but this has got to be one of the more interesting conversations I've heard so far.
Great.
I don't even necessarily really know where to start except to plead ignorance right off the bat. I'm only 29, and I can't say I've ever even heard of Charlie Chan before, but the reason I was calling was, and the gentleman who's quite angry about this whole situation,
yes.
It just makes it even more clear to me. As I was listening, I mean, yes, I think I understand what he's trying to, or what he's angry about, is that, you know, he wants us to see the Chinese the way they see themselves and mm-hmm. really absorb the culture, because
yes.
it is a rich and ancient culture for sure. But at the same time, it seems to me in this country, a lot of people's eyes are very closed to the outside world, and perhaps it's a necessary device to present a humorous stereotype to get people, even if it's just a small percentage of the people that see it. Yes, the great majority may laugh in the end, but some people may actually take the time to investigate the culture after having seen something like that.
So maybe there is a bridge here for people who might not even look otherwise. Jorg, let us hold that thought, and I appreciate your call. One more right here from Foster, Virginia. Mary, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hi, Mary.
I'm here.
Hi.
I just wanted to say that I found it interesting, the comparison of your guest with Charlie Chan and the Trickster character. When I was a child, I saw Charlie Chan many Saturdays. And I have to say, because I guess I'm not Chinese, I didn't see the racism or the caricature in his character. However, I did see it in the Stephen Fetchett character, because I didn't see anybody in my community like that.
But Mary, may I ask your race?
I'm African American.
And so Stephen Fetchett bothered you, but Charlie Chan didn't. Could that just be because?
It's interesting.
But I mean, you know, some, and I'm sure Frank Chin would say that, you know, these are not so different. You've got a caricature, a stereotyping going on in one and in the other.
Yeah, this is true, but I saw in Charlie Chan something. The trickster character who knew a lot, who didn't let on many times how much, I mean, what he really knew, but was very wise.
Who was savvy, wise or savvy. Yeah, Mary, we've got that. And one more, Tom. Thank you, Mary. Tom in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina.
Hello, how are you?
Hi, fine. What do you think, Tom?
Well, I think that your caller, or at least one of your participants, needs to lighten up a lot. I mean, I'm an Italian-American, and I would be delighted if a caricature of an Italian-American had the brightest guy in the room, unfailingly courteous, and a devoted family man who's also honest. Charlie Chan was just cheap entertainment, and it was entertainment, and I enjoy it.
Frank Chin, how about it? Tom says, you know, he's Italian-American, lighten up. Charlie Chan was bright, courteous, family man, honest. What's so bad?
Nothing. With that image of the Italians, they have the mafia, they have the Anti-Defamation League, and all the other cultural artifacts or institutions that all Italian Americans are aware of. Chinese Americans are not aware. Chinese Americans were judged not human by the Chinese Exclusion Act. Mm. We were educated exclusively by the Christians in San Francisco until 1960, between 1925 and 1960. We had to be Christians. And we learned, we learned to answer obediently, courteously. We learned to be white servants. At that time, we knew Wang Gong, but through the Christians and the education, we no longer know Guan Gong. A woman walked into a bookstore in Chinatown
and said, "Oh, is there a book on Guan Gong?" She just learned that her husband of 40 years was related to a Chinese god. Is there anything on the Chinese god in this bookstore? And everyone just dropped their jaws. I mean, it was like walking into a church and saying, "Do you have a pamphlet or something on Jesus Christ?" Jesus Christ.
And there it wasn't there. Frank Chin, author and playwright, author of Gunga Din Highway, Donald Duck, Bulletproof Buddhist, and other essays. We hear you standing up for the older Chinese genuine story there, and I appreciate your joining us today. Yente Wang, your thoughts here. I mean, you've come in as a fresh immigrant and said, "Oh, I see something to admire here." Frank Chin, you know, son of longer-term Chinese Americans, you can hear his deep unease with that.
Well, by listening to the, you know, callers and also to Frank Chin, you can tell this is exactly the gap I'm trying to bridge with my book, is that it's really kind of, you know, the opposite views of Charlie Cheng as to who he is. And this is really something I'm trying to, you know, I'm, of course, fully aware of, you know, that's why I have to reconcile my feelings, you know, my fondness for this character with some, you know, with those very understandable feelings among Asian Americans, you know, the anger. This is a story Frank Cheng might like. Actually, you know, one day, a white grandmother walks into a bookstore. And she said, "I'm looking for a good book of American literature for my, you know, for my granddaughter." And the bookseller gave her Frank Chin's Donald Duck. And the grandmother said, no, I mean a good American literature book." Mm-hmm. And but we have really gone, you know, walked really far since then.
I guess so. Yente Wang's new book is Charlie Chan, The Untold Story of the Honorable Detective and His Rendezvous with American History. There is more to mine there, and I hope we have a chance to do it again. I appreciate your time today, Mr. Wang. Thank you very much for your time and for your new book here. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Tom.
And our thanks to Frank Chin as well, playwright of The Chicken Coop Chinaman and much more, for joining us from Los Angeles. Listeners, thanks for being here. This is On Point.